Good morning. I am here on behalf of Michael J. Teer because of this issue. Was Michael J. Teer prejudiced when the trial court violated Missouri statute, ignored the jurors' assessed punishments, and sentenced Mr. Teer to a length of incarceration 5 times longer than the maximum possible length recommended by the jury? The Court of Appeals agreed with us that the trial court had violated Section 558.021 because the trial court did not allow the state to file an amended information charging Mr. Teer as a prior offender until after the jurors had already been given the case and had been instructed, should they find Mr. Teer guilty, to assess punishments. And as a result, did not find Mr. Teer to be a prior offender until also after the jury had assessed the punishments.
Is there any defense that Mr. Teer has to the enhanced charge?
He admitted on the stand that he had a prior offense.
This is a matter by statute, then, that is relegated to the court to impose sentencing.
Yes.
What difference would it have made, what practical difference would it have made to your client had the statute been followed?
The practical difference was, aside from, he decided to testify at his trial. Had he known that the state was going to charge him as a prior offender, he might have changed his mind about testifying. That's the one problem. But of course, that's pure conjecture. We don't know.
You don't have to. The state can introduce evidence of his prior conviction, whether or not he is charged as a prior offender. So how does that impact his decision to testify?
The state introduced the evidence of his prior conviction at the close of its case, and that was accepted. But at that point, Mr. Teer was still not classified a prior offender. So he would not be sure what the ramifications of his testifying would be or wouldn't be. He had to take a very serious gamble because of the trial court's error.
Well, would you explain that a little more to me?
Excuse me?
Would you explain the gamble a little more to me? I'm not quite.
Well, because the state did not advise anyone before trial that it wanted to file, that it wanted to classify Mr. Teer a prior offender. It announced it. I can't remember the first announcement, but definitely by the end of its case, that's when it came in with the amended information. And according to defense counsel, the first chance that it knew that the state meant to charge Mr. Teer as a prior offender. So by then, more than half of the trial had already happened.
Yeah, but the question is, what would you have done differently and why?
Well, see, we don't know exactly because it didn't play out that way. But what we do know is
what
that
are the consideration, what might have, if, for instance, his decision to testify. Why does that impact that one way or the other?
Because if he had been classified a prior offender already before he testified, then he might have chosen not to testify to emphasize the fact that he was a prior offender.
But you just said that the state announced that they were going to do that at the end of their case, and
but
that's before he made the decision whether or not he was going to testify, isn't it?
Well, the state announced that it was going to try. I mean, that's for the court to decide if he's a prior offender or not.
But if he testified, they could ask him about prior convictions, regardless whether they proved him up.
Yes, that's
or
true.
Not. So, well, in your brief, I thought your argument was that basically you're giving the state a second chance. The statute requires the state to make this proof before the case goes to the jury and for it to be determined whether he's a prior offender before it goes to the jury. Here it wasn't done until later, so the jury not only determined guilt but determined punishment, and then the court, in effect, made that determination of punishment only advisory, and that you shouldn't give the state. There's a reason the statute requires the state to make that proof at a certain time.
We're arguing that Mr. Teer should have been, that he could not be found a prior offender when the trial court found him to be, that he should not have been found to be a prior offender at all, because the court did not follow the correct procedure, because its finding, even with Mr. Teer testifying, the court's finding that he was a prior offender was too late under the statute.
Isn't it true if the defendant wanted to waive his right to jury sentencing, he would have had to do it before trial?
Yes.
So isn't it kind of what's fair for the goose is fair for the gander?
Yeah, why should the state be allowed to sandbag until the very last minute, why should the court have permitted that sandbagging, in essence?
And the real issue of this case is when is the determinative time as to when you should decide whether or not it's a jury trial, before it starts or after it's done?
You know, we ask the jurors to make the toughest decisions in a courtroom, and we shouldn't do that lightly. We shouldn't ask them to take time out from their days and their lives and come to the courtroom and make these decisions and then say, well, we're going to ignore part of your decision.
Didn't you argue, though, you knew that the state had asked for permission to charge him as a prior offender?
At the end of its case,
and
yes.
And you argued to the court, this could prejudice him, since in oral argument the jury was told. And
yes.
So the jury in its deliberations might decide the case differently if somehow you take punishment away from them. So you caused the trial court to send it to the jury in an advisory capacity, didn't you?
No,
because
the state,
you were arguing prejudice if the court didn't do that?
The state also voir dired on punishment. So by the time the defense came in, I didn't have any choice. It also had to voir dire on punishment. So even if the defense had not mentioned anything about punishment during voir dire, the jurors would still have known that this was going to be part of their job.
But that could happen, and all of it occur under the correct timetable.
Yes.
So what you're arguing was a prejudice is not something that the rule prohibits.
No, but it would be nice if that determination had to be made, as it normally is, before the jury even shows up in the courtroom.
I'm sorry, I was statute instead of rule.
I understand. Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
I think is the question before the court, what is prejudice? Is it prejudice? Opposing counsel would argue there's no prejudice because all they were allowed to do is prove up what everybody knew they could prove up. They just did it at a later time, and they would argue that it didn't affect your presentation of evidence, versus I take it your argument is that it's prejudice because your client because they failed to comply with statutory requirements, had a right to jury sentencing, and the fact that had they prepared their case better, he wouldn't have, is irrelevant. There's a lot of things you could do that might have made your case better, but you look at the cases that's presented, and they took that away. But it's do we look at, is it actual prejudice to the presentation of the case, or do we look at prejudice in the sense that you came out worse than you would have otherwise? What kind of prejudice do you have to show?
That's a good question. I would love to say that just violating the statute should be prejudicial. You know, when my clients violate Missouri statute, they go to prison.
You would require us then to overturn the decisions in many, many cases, wouldn't you, if we accepted that argument?
No. But what happens when a statute is violated? What do you do to make that right?
You look at see if there's any prejudice.
And the prejudice is that Mr. Teer lost the jurors assessed punishments, because under Missouri statute, the judge was bound to sentence Mr. Teer to no more than the jurors assessed punishments. That's what he lost. He lost the jurors assessed punishments, you see. And why did he lose them? Because the court made a mistake. And worse than made a mistake.
Is the jury's assessed punishment less than the maximum for the crimes of which they found him guilty?
Quite less. The judges were the maximum.
Pardon?
The judge assessed the maximum and then ran all the counts consecutively.
No, I understand that.
But
I mean, given what the jury was told about the maximum, because they weren't given the enhanced maximum, they were told, here's the range.
There would have been no enhancement as a prior offender.
What was the non-enhanced maximum? Did the jury give him the non-enhanced maximum, or did the jury give him even less than the maximum they could have given him Not thinking he was a prior offender.
Mr. Teer's sentences were never enhanced as a prior offender.
What's the maximum the jury could have given him under the instruction?
What the judge gave him.
No, because that wasn't enhanced. They couldn't give him.
He got 10 months. Did he get 10 months? Did he get a matter of months, wasn't it?
Yes, it was months versus years. It was 48 months maximum under the jury's assessment.
Thank you. That's what was
I'm
question.
Sorry, I didn't understand the question.
No, but the question I was asking is, did the jury, understanding what the jury was told about the maximum, did they max him out?
No, they did not. Okay. They didn't come close to maxing him out. And they were the ones who heard the evidence and were given the job to determine guilt and assess punishment.
The fact that he was a prior and persistent offender increased the time to which he could be sentenced.
He was just a prior offender.
Okay, as a prior offender, did that increase the range of punishment?
No.
Okay.
No.
And took it away.
Were the charges a Class C felony? Because that's what is on page 7 of your brief. It says the state asked the jurors if they could consider the full range of punishment on Class C felonies up to 7 years in jail.
Well, then the court did not assess the full range. The court did not assess the maximum. Excuse me. I thought it was a Class D for some reason. Excuse me. That's what Mr. Teer lost, were those jury-assessed punishments. And worse than that, the judge just disregarded them. You know, he's like, I know what they are. I don't care. This is what I'm going to give it. That's what Mr. Teer lost. That's where the prejudice comes in. And now the problem is, how do you fix the prejudice? Well, under this court in Emory, we're asking that he receive what he should have received had the court recognized that it was too late to find him a prior offender and had let the jury's assessed punishment stand. There would be no prejudice if the court had done exactly what it should have done.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Your Honors, Karen Kramer for the respondent, State of Missouri. I want to go over the facts just real quickly because listening to what's been discussed, I want to make sure that there's an understanding of exactly the timing of how all this went down. At the close of the state's case, the state said, we just learned that he has prior offense. We want to charge him up as a prior offender. We want to file an amended information.
Now, when you say at the close, is it before they closed or after they closed?
I believe it was after they closed. But I would have to check the record to be sure, Your Honor.
If it's after they closed, if it's after they closed, why isn't the argument and responses just in part of this case?
I'm sorry?
If it's after they closed.
Right.
This just isn't part of this case, whether you just learned or did not learn. It isn't part of the case. You closed your case. That's it.
Because the state has the ability to file an amended information up to any time prior to the verdict.
Yeah, but there's also a statute here, unlike other things you might charge in an amended information, that says you have to prove them up at a certain time.
Well,
you can't just ignore that statute and just look at the general one.
I don't want to spend a whole lot of time arguing about whether it's the statute or the rule, but I will say that since the rule and the statute are both procedural, that the rule does in fact govern because procedural rules govern over procedural statutes, unless when the statute was passed, it was passed and it explicitly stated that it intended to amend or annul the statute,
but
and that is not what we have in this case.
The rule doesn't say you can prove them up after the state closes, does it?
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
It just allows
the rule
amendment.
Says that you can file an amended information at any time up to a verdict as long as it, A, does not charge a new charge, which we don't have here, all the case law agrees on that, and B, does not affect the defendant's substantial rights.
But we're
rights.
Talking about proving up, right? And putting on your evidence, proving him up as a prior.
Right,
offender.
And we did.
And what's your time period that you can prove
we did
up?
Prove up prior to submission to the jury. We proved that he was a prior offender prior to submission to the jury. And that's what we have to do under the statute.
And right. The statute requires it prior to submission. It doesn't require it as part of the state's case.
No, it does not. We can do it under the statute. We can do it any time prior to submission to the jury, and the state did, in fact, do that.
And does the statute require the court to make a ruling on that prior to submission?
The statute, excuse me, the statute states that the court is supposed to make that ruling prior to submission to the jury.
So however, should we just ignore that?
Well, in this case, the jury was out before you even request leave to amend, according to your own brief.
That's not true, Your Honor.
Well, that's what your brief says.
No, that's not true, Your Honor. If my brief says that, that's a misstatement. That is absolutely not what happened.
So once again, the jury went out to deliberate. The state again asked for leave to file
that
an amended.
That was the third time, Your Honor. The state asked twice prior to submission to the jury to file its amended motion. It tried to do everything in a timely manner, and it did prove them up prior, and it asked two times. And the court made it very clear that it was going to allow the state to file the amended motion. It never said, well, I don't know about that. It just said, yeah, that's fine, but I don't want to do it until after the jury goes out. I don't know why, but that's what they did.
Did the state bring up the statute or rule to the court and show that they needed to do it prior to submission to the jury?
The state did not bring up the statute, no. The state brought up the rule which requires it that it be allowed to do this any time prior to the verdict. That was how the state was operating. But, in fact, the state did ask twice prior to submission to the jury to bring it up, and the court simply said, for whatever reason, and I don't know, and it might have been because the defense was arguing in this case, well, no, because we're going to instruct the jury and there's going to be a problem. And it's really quite confusing, Your Honors, and I would just suggest that the court read the colloquy between the defense counsel, the prosecutor, and the court at the time the state first made its request to file an amended motion.
But fact is the jury was told it would determine guilt and punishment, but then, in effect, its determination on punishment was considered advisory by the court, I guess, would be.
Yes, it was. And in fact, everybody except the jury knew that that's how it was going to go down. Everybody knew that. The court said, look, this is what we're going to do. I'm not going to let you actually file this thing until after this. We're just going to take care of this all after this gets submitted to the jury. I don't know why the court did that.
Do you think it's good policy to try a case, to have a ruling from this court that we can go all the way through trial and then decide whether or not you have a right to a jury trial on sentencing? Does that really make any sense?
Your Honor, I think the case law has allowed it for years. The statutes have allowed it for years. We don't have to make a decision about jury sentencing prior to going through the trial. We certainly can go through an entire trial. And then as long as it's done before submission to the jury, we certainly can make a decision that, yes, you know what, he's a prior offender, we're going to take sentencing away from the jury. That's been the law in this area for years.
I understand there were some case decisions to that effect, but isn't it logical for us to think that maybe the legislative action in this case is in response to that idea?
I see no reason to believe that. Here's what I think the legislative response, what they're looking for here. The key here, of course, as far as when something is pled, is to put the defendant on notice. That's the key for any time you make any pleading. We could be amending the charge, Your Honor. We could be amending the charge as long as we're not raising a new charge. We could do that. The key here is he put on notice. Here, in this particular case, he cannot possibly argue that he was not put on notice because he was put on notice as early, before he even testified, before he took the stand, that the state was going to try to prove him up as a prior offender. And, of course, he knows all along he has a prior offense. That just comes as no surprise to him. He has no defense, and that's the normal standard of determining procedure when you're talking about whether somebody was prejudiced by the timing of the filing of the amended charge, the amended information or something like that. Did it affect their ability to defend the case? That's the substantial right that's at issue here, and of course that substantial right is not at issue here. He doesn't claim he wasn't a prior offender. He admits he was a prior offender. He doesn't claim he would have been able to do anything different. Counsel stands before this court now and says, well, we don't know. He might not have wanted to testify. Well, he knew prior to testifying. He knew prior to testifying in this case that the state was going to try to prove him up as a prior offender. And what's more, he knew that they'd probably be able to since he knows he is a prior offender. So this comes as no surprise to him.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
When in the trial did you prove that he was a prior offender for the first time? When did you put that proof in?
Hang on just a second. I believe it happened. Appellant testified in his own defense. He admitted at that time, after the defense rested his case, but before the case was submitted to the jury, the state submitted to the trial court, out of the presence of the jury, State's Exhibit 26, which was a certified copy of the appellant's prior conviction.
Okay, so if I get the way this happened, at the close of the prosecution case, the prosecution says, wait a minute, we want to amend to include the prior offender.
Correct.
Defendant then makes the decision to testify and testifies that he has been convicted before.
Yes, correct.
And then at the close of all evidence,
yes,
you put in, or the state puts in, the actual conviction record,
yes,
of some sort.
Yes.
Okay. So he knows before he testifies.
Yes, he does.
But you haven't, there's been no proof in the sense of evidence until after you've closed your case and they begin their
right case. But okay, we don't have to.
And this proof wasn't offered until the jury was out of the courtroom. Was there a strategy on the trial court's part of not wanting to do this in the jury's presence that didn't want to confuse the jury?
Well, I think they're not supposed to do it in the jury's presence, and I think the statute actually states that the proof is not supposed to be done in the jury's presence because it could be extremely prejudicial to a defendant if the jury found out that he had a prior conviction, assuming that he hadn't testified. Now, in this case, he happened to testify, so they knew anyway, but they're also instructed in that circumstance that they're only to consider it for his credibility.
What does the record reflect whether or not there was any talk of plea bargaining?
Your Honor, I don't recall. I don't recall. I simply don't recall. But to the question of prejudice merely goes to whether this affected his ability to defend the case or not, and it did not. Appellant, in their brief, their claim of prejudice is that they were deprived of the jury's ability to compromise on the verdict. Juries do not have a right to compromise on verdicts. Appellant does not have a right to a compromise verdict. So that claim of prejudice simply has absolutely no basis whatsoever in the law. I will not stand before this court and say that this was a paragon of procedural practice, but the bottom line is there was no reversal. You liked that, didn't you? But there was no reversible error in this case. What we've got here is the fact that a document was not filed until later, a document that everybody knew what it was going to say,
difference as to whether the jury determined punishment. So it's a lot more than that. The jury went in there thinking they would, and they did. So let's not forget the importance of the jury to this process.
Well, but
it's not just a document.
But he has no right to the jury sentencing in this case because he is a prior offender.
Well, he does. If you didn't prove he was a prior offender, then he has that right.
But
you know, there's a lot of things after the fact you might wish you'd proved during trial, but we don't let you go back and do other things.
But
you're arguing we should let you go back and do this one.
No, Your Honor, I'm not, because we proved it. We did prove it.
But if I'm a defense attorney and I think the jury's going to sentence my client, I'd like the jury to think he's a nice guy, he's okay, maybe he made a mistake, give him some break on sentencing. If they're not going to sentence, I'm going to concentrate totally on innocence or guilt. I won't worry at all whether they think he's a nice guy. I just want to make sure they declare him innocent.
Well, Your Honor,
the legislature bifurcated these in 2003, I thought.
Right, which is the interesting thing about this case, which is the fact that unless the legislature changes and we go back to non-bifurcated trials, this isn't going to come up again. This isn't going to come up again. It shouldn't come up again. I can't fathom how it would come up again.
So which way does that cut?
Yeah.
Which way does that cut, the fact that it's never going to happen again? I mean, do you think that helps your argument or hurts your argument?
I can see it both ways, Your Honor. To be perfectly fair, I can see it both ways. But the bottom line is, under all, I believe, I can't remember if it was Judge Breckenridge or Judge Russell brought up during the appellant's argument, they said, well, if we were to rule your way, we would have to overrule numerous cases. And that's, in fact, true. Because my brief is full of them. There are numerous cases which say it's not a problem. It's not a problem to prove them up late. And we didn't prove them up late. We did not prove them up late. We proved them up prior. And there's cases that say when there's a procedural error in the fact that the state, that the court didn't make an express finding on the record prior, that that's just a procedural error. And as long as there's no question that he's a prior offender, and as long as he's treated as a prior offender, which is what happened in this case, then there is no error. The only error we have here is procedural, and it goes with the timing of a document that everybody knew about. He cannot and has not shown how that prejudiced him. And here's the question asked, and I think it was Judge Price who asked it. What difference would it make? What practical difference would it have made if the judge had said, okay, I'll take the document now, as opposed to waiting until the jury goes out? It wouldn't make any practical difference in this case whatsoever. The fact of the matter is, appellant is a prior offender. He knows he was a prior offender. He was proven up timely as a prior offender. He was not entitled to jury sentencing. Any jury recommendation that as to sentencing that the jury made, it could be considered superfluous under the statutes and under the law. He is not entitled to the, in my personal opinion, insultingly lenient sentence that he received for killing four people and seriously injuring another. And he has no legal basis for it. And this court should affirm appellant's.
Well, you know, what you just said is really, I think, goes to Judge Tedlin's point a moment ago, and that is, this is an involuntary manslaughter case involving a drunk driver. And
yes.
Juries sometimes look at those with some sense of forgiveness, even though they're going to impose a punishment, which they did for a term of some imprisonment. But the jury did weigh that. They did have the evidence that four people died in this crash, and they did have the evidence of his circumstances. So they, you know, if they really did think about, I mean, in terms of his opportunity to have the jury fix his sentence and appear before the jury and talk to the jury, which is what he did.
Well, the jury has two things it has to decide. First of all, it has to decide whether he's guilty or not. And frankly, whether or not he's going to be sentenced lightly or heavily should have nothing to do with whether or not they find him guilty or not, because if they're deciding it that way, then they are not abiding by their oaths. Okay? So if they found him guilty.
No, I'm not suggesting a compromise, just even for a second. They found him guilty, no question about it. But when it came to the punishment, they weren't sure that the punishment was worthy of anything more than that because of the circumstances they heard about this person's deal. And by the way, what was his prior offense?
I think the one that they actually ended up proving up and going forward with was a stealing $150. He did, there was some issue about whether he had a prior for drunk driving, but I don't think that they ultimately went forward with that.
That wasn't in our record.
Right. My time is up, Your Honor. I would just like to say he's not entitled to jury sentencing, so what the jury decided is of no consequence. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Being a prior offender is not like wearing a scarlet letter. If the state wants to treat someone like a prior offender, they have to follow the procedures in 558.021. That's what our legislature has decided.
And that is contrary to scores of cases. Because the scores of cases require proof of prejudice, that they don't say simply because there was an error in the procedure, he's entitled to relief. They require the showing of prejudice.
You can look at all of the state's cases in their brief. None of them are exactly what happened to Mr. Teer. None of them. They are all distinguishable.
And part of what happened to him was based on his argument to the trial court. That he wanted it submitted, the punishment submitted to the jury, despite knowing that that would not have any effect because he argued that that would impact the jury's decision on guilt.
At the time he made those arguments, the state had not filed the amended information yet charging his client as a prior offender. So at the time, Mr. Tier was not classified a prior offender, and he had every right to make that argument.
He was making that argument in response to their request to file it as a prior offender.
The trial counsel, I believe, had a little difficulty with understanding 558.021. You can read the transcript. He said that the prosecutor said, we found out a week before trial that Mr. Tier has a prior offense. And he objected because of that time period and Mr. Tier being classified a prior offender, which I believe is incorrect under 558.021. I think the state had a right at trial to file the amended information. The question is when during the trial. For whatever reason, the state did attempt to file the amended information before, but the thing is the court did not grant the filing until after the case had been submitted to the jury. And that's exactly what 558.021 says you cannot do. The substantial right, the state would like to argue 23.08 because it has to.
So if the trial judge had allowed them to file it, then he would have had a rule on it by saying, I'm not really accepting your filing until after the jury comes back. He's really giving them that latitude, because otherwise, if he let them file it, he'd have to rule on, and he'd rule in favor of the state.
There is one thing I agree on with counsel, my opposing counsel. I have no idea why the trial judge did what he did. I can personally tell you the prosecutor was furious about what happened. For whatever reason, the statute doesn't say when the state attempts to file. The state has to attempt to file the amended information before the jury is given the case.
Does the docket sheet indicate when he filed? When he actually filed the... there's a docket sheet usually on the file. Does it indicate when the request was filed?
I do not know, but the transcript very clearly shows that the trial court accepted the amended information after the jury had been given the case.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. The time is up. The case is submitted.